This is the WGNS Action Line, talking with Rutherford County newsmakers about what matters most to you. Now, your host, Scott Walker.
This morning, we'll be talking about issues that involve everything from laws in Tennessee to school vouchers, you name it. With us today, we have State Senator Don White and also State Representatives Mike Sparks and Robert Stevens. How are y'all doing this morning?
We're doing great. How are you doing?
I'm good. So what has been happening within the state and on Capitol Hill and everything?
Well, of course, this week was special session. And so I'll talk about the parent choice, school choice bill. And then I'll let the other gentleman talk about the other two pieces of legislation that was passed during special session. We went in on Monday, the governor called it, and then we ended yesterday. And so next week we'll be in regular session where all committees will be open and all bills will be heard. Only a couple committees were open that the three bills went to. So not all the committees were open this week. And so next week we're in full session and in the full swing of everything.
So with things like vouchers, school choice, what does all this really break down to mean?
We passed a bill yesterday. The House passed it. The Senate passed it, where 20,000 families are able to get a scholarship and it's based, $10,000 is based on low-income families, and then $10,000 will be given to any other family in the state of Tennessee. And, you know, Scott, there was so much misinformation out on social media. Of course, I know you're shocked at that statement. But the truth is, we educate more than 960,000 children in the state of Tennessee in public education every year. This is 20,000 scholarships. This is 2%. If all scholarships are taken that first year, it'd be less than 2% of the children that we actually educate in public education every year in the state of Tennessee.
And so what has to happen for a child to qualify to get one of these scholarships if their parent wants to send them to a private school?
Again, the first $10,000 will be for low-income families, and then the other 10 is a first-come, first-served basis.
Okay, and then after they get to that point where, you know, they receive the phone call, they receive the letter saying, all right, you're qualified, you're going to receive this scholarship. What happens, and how do they go about paying that private school? I mean, where does the money actually go?
The private school, charter school, has to apply with the state. So we're not sending. It's around $7,300 the family will receive from the state of Tennessee. And so we're not sending that directly to a parent. The school that the parent chooses to send their child to has to apply. The state will send it to that school that is a designated school by the state of Tennessee and that has applied and been approved by the state of Tennessee. It's also, they have to be a category 1, 2, or 3. There's 5 categories in the state of Tennessee that you can be categorized as, but it's 1, 2, and 3 is what the Freedom Scholarship will apply to. And so another thing that I think is very important for the public to realize too is if a school district through the TESA formula has a amount, and I mean just for easy math so everyone can understand, smaller school districts, of course Rutherford County, millions upon millions receives from the state of Tennessee because of our enrollment, but let's just say a small school district receives $10 million from the state. If their enrollment, for any reason, whether it's, you know, a plant closes in that area, or if there's a mass exit of children leaving because of the scholarship. If their money that they receive from the state, let's just say falls for easy math to $9.8 million from $10 million, the state will pick up to make them whole. So no public school is going to lose any money. The state will pick up $200,000 and send that district $200,000 to get them back to $10 million.
Okay, and then there's no, of course, guarantee that the same student can get a scholarship the following year, right?
They have first priority if they're in the program. Then the expansion of the program. They have to have 75% of the scholarships taken and applied for before we can expand the program to 5,000 the next year. So it's not going to be a massive that we're going to give every student in the state of Tennessee that's in public education a scholarship. This is a safeguard to make sure that it's not going to blow up and the state of Tennessee can also handle it. So 75% of the scholarships have to be applied for before we expand it to 5,000 more.
But again, it's the private school that's the one actually applying for those funds.
They have to be approved by the state and applied before the state will send that school the money. Yes.
And once more, is there any breakdown as far as, all right, Rutherford County is going to receive X amount of scholarships and Bedford County is going to receive 10 scholarships? I mean, do we have a breakdown?
No. Again, the first 10,000 will be income based. Low income families will receive and have first priority of those 10,000 scholarships. Then it's a first come, first serve. There are some little guidelines in there about the next 10,000, but it's basically a first come, first serve for the general public to know.
So what else was discussed in that special session? I mean, was it just that one thing?
No.
So we had three different topics. The biggest one people saw on the news was the education freedom scholarships. Another one was dealing with illegal immigration. With the new federal administration, there's a renewed focus on enforcing our immigration laws. And so Governor Lee put in the call for the special session that he wanted us to focus on ways to help Tennessee deport illegal immigrants, especially those who are here with criminal backgrounds. So we passed a bill yesterday, and the Senate passed the bill also, that creates an immigration enforcement division within the Department of Safety. Those individuals in that department will be responsible for coordinating with local and federal officials to help with finding people that are here illegally and being sure that they get deported. No one who's here legally or no U.S. citizens will be deported by this department. Again, as the senator said, there's lots of misinformation out there about who's going to be deported. These are going to be people who are not here legally.
What, was there some type of misinformation that people who are here legally could be deported or something?
There's lots of hyperbole and lots of misinformation about all the issues out there on social media to try to confuse people, and I'm not sure where it originated, but this is for illegal people. They could be deported with this new department. And then also the part of the bill was to create a grant fund so that local governments could apply for funding from the state to help pay for these programs and positions to effectuate the deportation process. So we're creating the new division within to help enforce the immigration laws, and then also provided some funding so that local governments could apply for that and get equipment, training, to help find the illegal people and be sure that they get deported.
I know here locally, the Rutherford County School Board even pushed forth a resolution of some kind asking for the president to make sure they have stronger border patrol and stronger border security to not let illegal immigrants in. Did you actually see that at the state level where counties like Rutherford County and the school board here, did you actually see those letters or that information of the school boards asking for that?
They did send us a resolution for that, and I agree that our borders do need to be secured and closed. When I left the county commission in 2022, there were about 4,000 students in the Rutherford County school system that spoke English as a second language. Not all of those are illegal, but many of them are. Today, that's over 8,000. So you have in 2.5 years, they've doubled the number of people in the school system that speak English as a second language. And that's just not sustainable for the school system. They have to have the classroom space and also provide support staff and teachers that can teach the English as a second language to these students. And the costs are just skyrocketing. So hopefully, if this new division and the federal administration do deport illegal immigrants, this will help our local school and county with their budget and their planning too.
I would imagine when you have a student in your class that can't speak English, but yet you're teaching in English, it could easily slow down the entire class because you're having to stop and explain what, you know, this word means, and then you have to explain the word, and it could go for, you know, word for word for however long that takes. That would be disruptive.
It's definitely disruptive, and there are dozens of languages spoken in our school system.
Hey, Sparks is over there. What are you playing over there? YouTube?
I was searching for something. I was searching for gun store break-ins and thefts. I mean, like Representative Stevens had made. I still want to call him County Commissioner, but anyways, Representative Stevens. You know, it's a serious issue. I get complaints from teachers. We get complaints from teachers. Scott, it's a different day today. It is a different day today. And, you know, I'm half immigrant myself. My mother came over from Scotland legally after my dad met her after World War II. She never wanted to go back to Scotland, but she came over here the right way. She came over here legally. You know, these students, and a lot of them work really hard. A lot of these DACA students, they're good students. I think 90-something percent of the folks that come over here want to work. They want a job. They want a better way of life. I mean, this is why we need to be thankful that we're blessed to be able to live in this country. There's people dying just to get in here. So these are tough issues. You know, my wife, I pray with my wife every morning before I leave. And I had my little grandbaby there, my little two-year-old Grace. And I grabbed her hand. She kind of gave me this little look, you know. And I left out, and my wife called me later. She said, "What's wrong? I can tell you something's on your mind." I said, "Man, we're taking on the toughest issues I've ever seen in a week's time." And I'll be honest with you, I was a little concerned for violence. I mean, we've got some people up there that I think have mental health problems. The protesters, I mean, holding up some nasty signs, flipping people birds. If it wasn't for troopers up there, there'd probably be some violence. I mean, lawmakers could potentially lose their life. I mean, I may be the only one saying that, but you know, Antifa was in front of my house 5 years ago. Somebody's paying these people to sit out there and cause chaos and rioting. But I read a quote the other day that I'll share that, you know, none of these bills are perfect. No bill's perfect. But I think it was Voltaire that said, don't let perfect be the enemy of good. So we always expect everything to be perfect, and it's not going to be perfect. But like what Roberts had mentioned, I mean, it's affected our school system. It's affected our county, and it's totally unsustainable. When I did my survey, that illegal immigration was the top issue. It wasn't like, well, it's maybe the top issue. No, it was definitely the top issue. So teachers today, school principals today, whether it's illegal immigration, the mental health problem that we're seeing, childhood behavior, these are issues that are at an all-time high. It is worse today than it was yesterday, than it was last year, than it was 10 years ago. So, I mean, I'm proud of the legislature for what we accomplished this week, and I appreciate Governor Bill Lee taking a stand, and that's what the citizens of Tennessee want us to do.
So during that special session, you had everything from illegal immigration to education. What else was there?
The third component of it was disaster relief. You remember a few months ago, there was the Hurricane Helene that came through and devastated Northeast Tennessee. And so part of what we spent our time on this week was looking for ways to help people up there rebuild. We passed several bills that provide some relief and some help to the local governments and the people up there so that they can rebuild their lives and rebuild their homes.
So in a special session, how soon after that actual meeting do these things become law, or do these things actually happen? You know, where the money is funded, is it funded right away? But what is the result?
Immediately, when the governor signs it into legislation.
So this all takes place fairly quickly.
Yes. And with the hurricane relief money, we had to send it up to East Tennessee for their tax credits and their tax by February the 18th. So it was very important that we do a special session for hurricane relief and tied in with whatever was going to be in the special session, because, of course, these people are really, really hurting. Yes. And they need help.
And have any of you seen the results of the new president in office yet, as far as funding in Tennessee, or as far as law changes that will impact Tennessee?
Well, I'll say this: there's hope. HOPE is a real word. It's a real thing. Just the day of election, I know there's probably 30% that disagree with me, but there's 70% of listeners out there that I'll say agrees with my stance. Just this election of President Trump and J.D. Vance has really encouraged a lot of folks. I'll be honest with you, I wouldn't want to point you out, but even Scott, if we had a different president, the same president or the vice president that was on the ballot, you would be looking like doom and gloom right now, wouldn't you, Scott? I know you don't want to say anything, but there really is hope, and I think it's hope for Tennessee. And there's just a better feeling, even though we're in tough times. I think people feel better. I noticed it the day of the election. I know I felt better.
And how will this impact things locally, though? I mean, like at the state level, when you're there in session, will a change in presidency have an outcome, or will it equal anything here at the state level?
It was ironic. I don't know if y'all, Trump signed executive order yesterday dealing with school choice. I thought it was very ironic and very timely. He's been a champion of parental choice, more parental involvement for years. And I thought that was just, it was confirming to me when the president signs that executive order while we're taking this issue up.
One of the big issues right now in our state, and I'm sure across the country, is protecting our children within the schools. And what is being done within the public school system when it comes to protecting our children and making sure guns are not going into schools?
Of course, after the previous school shooting, we did a grant where schools were able to apply for, safety measures, film on glass to make them bulletproof, take out glass doors. And so we made a huge fund and grants out of that fund for school safety. After the unfortunate incident in Antioch last week, I feel like we will probably look at grants again to make school safety a huge priority in this legislative session. Of course, bill file deadline is February the 6th, and so we really don't know what is being filed yet. All bills will have to be in by February 6th to see what school safety bills will look like for the upcoming session.
Do lawmakers as a whole have a strong grip on understanding that, the problems that we're seeing now within our schools, it's not a problem of too many guns being readily available. It's a problem of people's mental status and where they are with their mental health. I mean, because it seems like if we can figure out a way to better focus on that, then we will solve a lot of problems.
Oh, you're exactly right. And, it seems like mental health is reaching younger and younger children as, this generation is coming up. And a lot of that has to do with COVID and being isolated for as long as the children were. And so we'll also look at mental health. That's always something that we fund and look at every session. And I know that will definitely be coming up in this session as well.
Scott, I was in a meeting last night with Siegel Middle School, and school board members Francis Rosales and Claire Maxwell were there. I was invited by, I think it was a behavioral counselor or something, and invited me. But I think the lady's name was Michelle. I'm chopping this up, I think, a little dose or something like that. But it was about the book, The Anxious Generation, and they had a panel of students up there, very articulate young Siegel High School students. Like I say, it's a different day to day, Scott. And I was thinking about the school choice issue. You think about those students that have to go to Antioch High School. They have to go because of their zip code. I didn't have to go to MTSU because of my zip code. I didn't have to go to Motlow because of my zip code. I didn't have to go to Vol State because of my zip code. These students are going to have to walk right back in there. They're going to have to walk back in that cafeteria. I mean, could you imagine dealing with that?
No, and I'm curious, are more counselors going to be hired to work at this particular school?
Well, that's what, y'all have heard me share. We hosted an event at my church, Parkway Baptist, mental health and opioid epidemic town hall. And we had a great panel. Appreciate, Senator White being there and others, Judge Barry Tidwell, the county commissioner who's passed away, Irwin. I remember him being there, and former Senator Ketchum was there. About 110 people in there. But here's what really I thought come out of that. I had emailed the late Dr. Linda Gilbert, and I know Senator White and I and others really thought a lot of Linda Gilbert, and I said, what's the silver bullet? Like, if there's one thing, because I know it's frustrating for us because you want to solve problems, and sometimes it's just so challenging in today's environment. But she sent me back the email, and she says, She said, thank you, Mike, for reaching out. She said, the behaviors, and this is what's alarming, Scott, and I know you've heard me share this. The behaviors of the 6 to 9 year olds are like something we have never seen before. She said, they're disorderly disruptive. Thought that was an interesting word to choose, disorderly disruptive. And she said, whereas the state is, they are trying, she said, but we need more, you know, behavioral counselors and she said social workers. I mean, social workers, the word social worker isn't a popular term among conservatives, but we do have to have teachers that can intervene with these, just like we have a nurse. If a student's sick, if a student has some kind of cut at school, they're going to see that nurse. But it's a different day, folks. I'm telling you, the days of me getting paddled, sent back to class, and me behaving, that's different today, Scott. These students or these teachers are having to be nurses, they're having to be counselors, they're having to be parents, and they're having to be interpreters. You know, I can understand why teachers consider leaving the profession. And I hate to say that on the radio, but I know we're all supportive of teachers and that school choice bill. By the way, why don't you pick up on the bonuses on the pay for the teachers?
I don't think it was mentioned. In the bill, because we do have a surplus, it's a bonus this year of $2,000 per teacher. It's 86,000 teachers in the state of Tennessee, so each one of those teachers will be receiving a $2,000 bonus out of the Freedom Scholarship bill.
Now, to get that bonus, is there anything that teacher or that school district has to do?
All that the school district has to do is do a resolution that says that the state can pay their teachers a $2,000 bonus, and that's all that the resolution has to say.
And that is a one-time bonus.
Correct.
Is there any thought on, you know, hey, can we do this again next year?
It will all depend on the surplus and what's left over in the accounts. Of course, you know, Tennessee is a very fiscally conservative state. We have an AAA bond rating because we've been so conservative with, you know, our finances throughout the year. And so, you know, we don't, of course, teacher raises through the TESA formula will be raised to $50,000 in the upcoming years, but right now, just because we don't know if the money will always be there, and you never can take anything away. We wouldn't want to take anything away if a teacher is planning on that money. So we have chosen this year to do a bonus.
And when will those teachers get that $2,000?
I believe as soon as the resolutions are passed. The bill did not say there'll be rulemaking but I believe it's sometime this year.
Okay. And time right now, by the way, 8:41. We got to take a short break, but with us right now in studio, Robert Stevens just left. He had to be somewhere, but with us right now, we have Senator Don White and State Representative Mike Sparks, and we're talking about issues going on within the state, different laws, and all kinds of stuff. Time right now, again, 8:41. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
Hi, this is Peter Demas. Join our family at Demas's Restaurant. So many people buy so many different things. You know, I go out to eat and I like eating steak, where my wife will end up getting her salmon. Our salmon is cut fresh, so she loves her salmon. It's one of those places that you can go, you can get pastas or chicken. You know, the kids love it. Get what you want at Demas's Restaurant and not be limited just to one or two items. Join our family at Demas's Restaurant, 1115 Northwest Broad Street in Murfreesboro.
We're at Adams Place talking with John Hood. John, what do you like most about Adams Place?
Well, Bart, I guess what I like most is the personal attention that you get, the comfort and security, and knowing that you're in a very outstanding place.
What made you choose Adams Place?
Well, frankly, I only looked at Adams Place.
I'm Terry Deal. Call me for more information about Adams Place, located at 1927 Memorial Boulevard, across from Walmart.
In today's changing world, you need a financial planner that you're comfortable with. Rely on the bonds that you've built with trusted friends at Old National Bank on Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard here in the borough. And if you just moved here, visit us and enjoy warm, homemade cookies.
Honey, the cookies are ready.
Like Grandma used to make. Old National Bank, We're better together.
2230 Dr. MLK Jr. Boulevard. Old National Bank. Member FDIC.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
Now with us in studio, we have State Representative Mike Sparks. Everybody else left you, man. What happened? What did you say during that break? Everybody's just gone.
Biggest fear I was sharing, I was just kidding with Senator White and Representative Stevens. You know, the biggest fear is coming up here for 45 minutes and having to take on all the issues.
And then comes your reality.
You don't have the answers, you know.
Well, last time you were on the air, you talked a little bit about lowering the age of school bus drivers. What was that?
Well, one thing I tried to do during the summer and the fall is just meet with a few school bus drivers and owners out there, and I appreciate the feedback. Clarissa Smith, she was on the radio show with me one, I think it was on my show on Sunday nights, and or maybe with Brian, I can't remember, but then I had Cindy Phillips DeMumbrian, who's a friend and constituent and classmate of mine from Smyrna High School, and it seemed like, you know, they're facing a crisis among themselves. You know, the cost of a new school bus, over $200,000 a day.
That's a lot of money for a school bus.
I mean, we need to ask ourselves, why are the costs escalating like they are? And I don't want to get into monopoly, but that's a whole nother topic that really probably needs to discuss. That's something I wish President Trump would take on as far as talking about the free market and excessive bureaucracy. But by legislation, I think it would fill the gap of the shortage of school bus drivers. It's just taking the minimum age from 25 to 21. Many people don't know Tennessee is the most restrictive state in the nation for being allowed to drive school bus.
I didn't know that. Yeah. You know, I know a couple of...
California is 21.
Huh.
Our surrounding states, most of them you can drive school bus at 18 in the surrounding states of Tennessee. Not
that's
all of them.
That's kind of scary. That's young to be driving.
Well, it kind of is.
I'm curious. I know there was an idea a few years back of putting seat belts on school buses. Whatever became of all of that?
Well, the fiscal cost to really taxpayers pay this, Scott. I mean, it sounds great when people say, let's do this, let's do that, but someone has to pay for it. And ultimately, you can say, well, the school bus drivers or the districts are going to pay for it. But that only gets spread down to the taxpayers, because the county commission's got to fund this, and it correlates back to property taxes. And I don't think that's going to happen in Tennessee. That was that heated debate. I was in the General Assembly then about, was it 8 years ago after the school bus crash in
Hamilton County.
Yeah, Hamilton County. And I talked to the chairman of transportation. He's from that area. I thought I might get some pushback from the chairman. I talked to him about this, and he was very, very receptive of the legislation. I feel confident in the legislation. But he made the comment that, that young man who was 24, 1 year shy of 25, shouldn't have been driving a school bus. He shouldn't have been behind the wheel of a school bus. And sadly, you know, very tragic. You know, there was some lives lost. But school bus drivers I've talked to and the owners are very responsible. And they, like we had David Settles up here, you know, with Mercer School Board. I didn't realize he was a school bus driver. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I just happened to call him. He invited me to the NAACP meeting the other day. And I said, you want to come on the radio with me? And he says, well, yeah, what time? I said, be up here at about 10:20 next day. He said, that'll give me time to finish my school bus route. I said, school bus route. And I had just left WKRN News doing an interview about this legislation. I mean, it's very coincidental. But I like something David Settle says. He says, you know, I'm the first face a child sees to start their day off, and I'm the last face a child sees when it comes to education. He said, I can encourage them or discourage them. So if you're a school bus driver, you're listening, try to have a happy face, because I think my wife's school bus driver was pretty bad, what all the kids would often say.
I know another issue you'd worked on in the past revolves around people speeding and people racing, because there's been, you know, a lot of car, I guess, races on area roadways, especially in the Nashville area. But a lot of the times those end in tragedy with a fatal accident.
Yeah, well, that was the illegal racing task force. And you know where that came from?
No.
That really came from a Democrat, to be honest with you. It was Jason Powell, and he tries to give me credit for it, but really it was Jason's idea. Jason and I kind of share, you know, I-24, and very passionate a lawmaker, and these issues aren't, you know, they're not Republican Democrat, they're just a people issue. It's a, you know, and we all should care about these issues, but you know, there's been fatalities, and if you drive to Nashville and back like I do, you see that how it's a, I hate to say it's a different day to day. It's got people to go from the far right lane to the HOV lane, go back from HOV lane, back over to the right lane. I've tried to call law a few times when I've seen people just start racing right there on I-24, but they're so fast and they're gone. You can't hardly get a description of the car, but hopefully, you know, that was a step in the right direction. You know, we had, there was a gentleman, he wasn't, but I think 32, had three kids. He was a combat medic and out of Clarksville. And he was killed by someone driving a high rate of speed like that, I think 110, 120 mile an hour. And he left, you know, his girlfriend behind and three kids. And think of how much work that guy, he was an Army combat. I mean, could you imagine doing that job?
No.
A combat medic. I mean, that would be one of the toughest jobs to do. And he was struck down by some knucklehead. And that guy's probably going to serve, I don't know how many years in prison, which is going to cost the taxpayers probably $500,000 to incarcerate somebody for just doing something stupid.
It seems like right now there are more motorists on the interstate than ever before. Of course, the population's growing, and that's the main reason why. But has anybody brought up the idea again of having a commuter rail system between?
That was mentioned this week. Have you studied the situation in California? The boondoggle.
Which
they're like $100 million over budget. Rail and rough. It sounds great. I know former mayor Bill Ketron had championed that 3P project, which is the public private partnership. Rutherford County, I remember asking Bob Spivey about that when it was years ago, but the right-of-way acquisition cost would just be so much going down the rail line and Smyrna, several buildings. My understanding would have to come out. And
could we not have it above the interstate in some way?
I just know if you look at California, I hate to say look at California, but if you see somebody else trying to implement a program and it's cost overrun, I think the Wilson County line works good. And I know there's the Amtrak that they've discussed, what was it, Memphis to Atlanta. I don't think it's going to work in our community. It sounds great. I mean, whether it's from maybe Memphis to Nashville, it sounds good. But someone has to pay for it. I know the choice lanes that will be implemented soon. Well, it's going to take a few years to get it accomplished. I think that's the right way to go. The WeGo mass transit can be productive, but sadly, I was telling someone law enforcement. I think I was talking to Homeland Security about the school shooting the other day, and we were talking about crime, and. I said, look, here's the irony. I said, I'm in the safest building probably in Tennessee. Troopers everywhere because of the potential for violence that we had this week with some people that have derangement syndrome. And I'm looking over at the bus, the WeGo bus station, and I'm looking over where a young 15-year-old was shot and killed, which is one of the most dangerous places. So how do you encourage people to do mass transit when the bus station itself is one of the highest areas for crime? Now, Metro has improved that with some officers. In fact, I was out there back during the summer. I was talking to Trooper William Bennett, and him and I will often chit-chat when I'm driving through, and all of a sudden he goes, hold on, and he took off running. There was a guy running from the bus station, young guy with a gun, and two other officers tackled him, and the trooper I didn't know how he was going to catch him because he's pretty good sized guy. And here's this young guy. He's not going to catch up with him. He tried. He tried his best. And it tore up his uniform, cut his hand. I just don't think rail in our day is going to work. I mean, if folks disagree, just look up California. Look up what they tried to implement. But Wilson County, I think it works over there for those folks.
You know, when it comes to crime and criminal behavior, it almost seems like it always goes right back to mental health.
It really is. You know, Scott, we're talking about that Antioch shooting. Somehow my name got mentioned the other day on another radio show, and so people were calling me. People had heard it. Hey, man, you're probably going to get a call from this station. And the DJ, the producer reached out to me. Do y'all still call them DJs?
announcer, host.
He reached out to me, and I'm like, okay, how am I involved in this? But I had a bill that was about juvenile justice, that if a child gets arrested, like what happened in Rutherford County, where the taxpayers paid $11 million out, by the way, to remember the kids that were incarcerated, handcuffed. Yeah. What school was that at, by the way?
Was it Hobgood?
Was it Hobgood?
I think so.
And I stood with the Black Caucus over that because I happened, ironically, I had a bill about juvenile justice, just said that, you know, they need access to their parents and an attorney when their rights are being read to them, because these are kids.
Yeah.
And somehow a father's son shared a Facebook post. The boy shared a Facebook post, and I guess it was deemed threatening. And here, if you're a parent, you need to really realize how serious this is. That young man was expelled for a year.
Wow.
For a year, just because he shared a Facebook post.
What was the post?
I didn't see it. It was, they deemed it being threatening. The threat, they deemed it, as I guess, called a threat assessment. That's why I reached out to some SROs, and thank you, Lisa Marciani, for helping me the other day in Homeland Security. But the mental health, this is what... And I'm going to be honest with you, Scott, I'm told there's a lot of lawmakers, and I don't say lawmakers, but elected officials that don't care about mental health.
I'm sure they don't have mental health issues themselves.
I mean, well, there could be, and no doubt.
I just don't know why we so often focus on gun laws, gun rights, but we don't focus as much attention on things like mental health.
I'm with you. I mean, that's where people... I mean, I had a mother call me last night. Well, she was a mother. Her son overdosed, and I had to preach the funeral. He overdosed on fentanyl, and I preached. Her husband passed 3 years ago, and I knew her husband. He was a friend of mine. She called me last night with an issue, and I'm encouraging her to get involved in Celebrate Recovery, if you know what CR is, and just get out and walk, you know, because I said, you can't be cooped up in your house. You got to get out, and it's a mental health issue if you're lonely, if you're isolated. Celebrate Recovery, from what I know, does wonders. I think they're meeting tonight at Hope Fellowship Church on Lee Victor Parkway. But it's a serious issue. You know, hell, I get depressed just going to Nashville. You know, I mean, seriously.
That drive can be
my wife
rough.
She knew I was, you know, not really nervous. It's just these issues are, I get torn on them. I mean, immigration, I'm half immigrant. These kids have come through the system.
You know, I think...
We've invested $100,000 in these kids, these DACA kids. So I brought up to the governor's office. I could get myself in trouble for sharing this on the radio, but the governor's office, and they were in my office a couple weeks ago. I said, man, there's got to be some type of pathway to citizenship for these kids that we've invested in. Let them go in the military, get an associate's degree of their choosing, but also have a heavy emphasis in civics, in government, in value, in the history of our nation. Because, you know, I don't see us sending all these children back to wherever. I mean, some of these kids don't even know, they can't even speak Spanish.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm probably the first to say this on the radio, but, and I may get hammered for it, but it's just, well, it's a different day today, man.
I think it boils down to there's a right way to do things and there's a wrong way to do things. And if you come into the country illegally, it's illegal.
Good point. And I used to look at it that way, but these kids were brought in by their parents.
Well, no, I'm not talking about the kids. Yes, I understand that aspect of it. That is a bigger problem that something has to be done about. But how do you address it when it comes to these children who are literally innocent victims of this?
They are. I mean, those are moral dilemmas that we're faced with as Christians. It's hard to be sitting in church on Sunday mornings and then, you know, maybe taking up an issue that conflicts with our inner core values, you know. So I hope I'm not in the minority with saying that, but I know when I did surveys and polling, illegal immigration was the top issue, you know, and I'd say most people that come to this country come here to find a good job and work and raise a family. But it's at 2 or 3 or 5% that reflect poorly on everyone else. I mean, those rash of stolen guns we're seeing, a lot of them are gang members, a lot of them Venezuelan gangs, MS-13. That's not me saying it. That's law enforcement saying that. So
We're already out of time.
Yeah.
It's 9 o'clock right now. You're tuned to WGNS. State Representative Mike Sparks, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Scott.
More news coming up in just a second, and we'll cover local news as well as national news in just 10 seconds.